We understand that most dads feel undervalued and misunderstood. The goal is for you to be encouraged through real conversations about the value of fatherhood in different stages of life. We raise our kids to leave the nest, but no one talks about what the second half of parenting looks like. In this episode, we pull back the curtain of parenting grown children. So welcome to the world's biggest small group Facing Fatherhood podcast. And today I'm joined with WayFM's DJ. Wally.
You could have gone with Premier Air Talent, but DJ's fine. Okay. I'll answer to that as well.
DJ, Premier Air Talent, A-lister Wally from the morning show on WayFM. And Wally, tell me a little bit about, we're talking about being dad. So tell me what qualifies you to be a dad and where you're at in that process.
I have a child. So I am a dad. She is 24 years old. Her name is Haley. So I'm an empty nester dad.
Yep.
Okay. Cause you have various different stages of dad life.
Yeah.
And I'm living my best life right now. Honestly, like I love that kid. She's my heart. I'll take a bullet for her without hesitation, but I do kind of like my life now.
Yeah.
But I will say this, like parenting a adult, I think is more challenging than when she was a child. I think it was way easier when she was a kid, honestly.
Yeah. Proverbs 22:6 says this, direct your children into the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it.
I love that.
Is it true? And I love the fact that you said you feel like it's even harder now. And I'm kind of, as we've been working through this study on facing fatherhood, I kind of feel that at every stage. Like, I kind of want to tell the father of the young kids, it gets harder when they're teenagers. Like, you think that's hard, just wait. But now you're even saying, I have teenagers, and now you're saying, oh, well, it feels like even now as an empty nester, it's harder. So I think maybe the moral of it all is, like, it's hard
it's
in every
hard.
Step.
Yeah, like, for me, with Haley, when she was younger, you go, hey, we're going to church, and, no, we're going to church. It was like, it wasn't an option. You made decisions for your kids when they're younger that you control, you know? And so then when they're older, hey, did you go to church this week? Oh, yeah, work was really tough and I'm tired and my work schedule's changed. Well, then how about going on Wednesdays? I don't know if I like the small group thing, you know? And so it's like trying to still be engaged without being pushy, or you can't be demanding about their faith, and because you know it's good for them, and you know, like I know that she's better when she is completely like locked in with her faith. She's happier, you know, and I know that. But then, you know, it's hard for her as an adult to always do the right thing. So, like that verse, I've kind of clung to that, going, I hope that her faith will become more serious to her as she gets a little bit older, you know?
I've read often, when you become an empty nester, a word you have to stop using, maybe, and you tell me if this is true or not, is using the word should, statements like that, because you're no, like you said, you're no longer their boss. Like, they are on their own. You are not their boss. We can encourage them, but like to use a statement like, you should do this, rather than, I don't know, do you phrase it now in a question? Like, how do you do it? She's gone from, she was in college, to she's moved out into another state now, to she's also dating a guy. So what are the steps in that where your relationship maybe shifted in each of those?
Well, it's funny, you mentioned the should. Like, I've had to tell my wife, don't make every conversation about, are you going to church? Because my wife, it's such a passion for her. Like, she wants this in Haley's life. And I'm like, you are going to end up alienating her completely if, you know, that's the only thing you ever talk about with her. Yeah. And so I try to not do that. I do subtly mention it in, and I do it in a way where it's like, hey, you know, have you been back to church? Because I know it's something you really loved. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to go, great. If not, I understand. Like, I ran my circles with God too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I ended up coming back later. You know, I'd just hate to see you miss out on time of something that I know is good for you. And I know that you love, you know, so that's kind of that. But as it's morphed over time, each step, they get more freedom, you know, and like in college are the things you can't control, and you have to give them that freedom, and you keep clinging to the promises in the Bible that they'll come back.
So let's spell that out, because other people are listening right now who maybe are in different phases of that. Like, empty nester looks different. And so fresh on my mind is we've been invited to graduation parties recently. So kids are getting ready to go to college. Like, how did that shift when she went from high school to college for you guys?
I was terrified because she wanted to go to New York for college, and she got accepted to a college in New York. And I was terrified of that. She then made the decision on her own. She was like, yeah, I don't feel like I'm ready for that. Mm-hmm. And so she ended up going to a college like 30 minutes from home, 40 minutes from home. And so for me, it wasn't as that big of a deal because we could still see her here and there, you know, and like I taught at that school. And so I would see her on Wednesdays a lot of days for just a few minutes.
Yeah.
She'd come in and say hi. And I loved that. You know, she even took my class, which was funny. Like she made me keep teaching there. So she could take my class because it was a junior senior level class, and she took it her last year. And so like we have this great relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's my heart, you know. But it was interesting that like our transition into college was different than our friends whose daughter moved, you know, 15 hours away or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they are such good parents. They were always there and stuff like that, but they had to drive longer. You know, so like, and it helped my wife too with Haley being close. We knew we could get to her if there was a problem.
Do you think it makes a difference that you only have one kid?
Like, absolutely.
Because you were focused on her.
That's it.
Yeah.
Just don't mess this one up. That was it.
Only had one chance.
That was it. Like, do not mess this kid up. And I don't think that I did, you know. Was I always the best version of like a godly father for her? I'd love to sit here and say as a Christian DJ, but the first 8 years of her life I was a shock jock, you know. And so, and then those habits died hard, and it took time to kind of push some of those away when I got here. And I'm still not always a great version of my faith for her. You know what it's like being a dad. Like, you pop off, something sets you off, and you want to take that reaction back. You wish you could unsay the thing you just said to her. I'll never forget this. This is such a jerk move. She was in a play, and she asked me to take pictures of this play because she's a theater kid. So I take these pictures of her, like, do the whole thing. I got a camera. I'm taking all these pictures. And she like looks at the pictures and she's like, oh, these are horrible. Look at this. You got my face like this. You got this. Like, she was critiquing all these pictures. I'm like, it's just a camera. I can only shoot what's there.
Oh, no.
And I devastated her little junior in high school heart. And if I could take any conversation back with her, I would take that back in an instant. And I would be like, dude, she's happy because they're not good looking pictures of her, and she's not happy with that, and she's insecure, and I should have been kinder. But then it played on my insecurities. Like, I wasn't doing enough for her. She wasn't grateful, and I lashed out. That conversation, mom's talking about mom guilt.
Yeah.
There's dad guilt.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish to God I had never said that, or I could take it back, but you can't, unfortunately.
I think a phrase that we've been using in our home, and I have teenagers, but I keep reminding them because, one, I'm a pastor, and two, they have this assumption that Christians should be perfect.
Right.
So I have to keep reminding them, like, we're not trying to raise perfect kids. Like, that is not our goal. That has never been our goal. It's okay. And you don't have perfect parents either. So, like, as long as we can all connect on that same thing that you're not perfect, I'm not perfect, that allows us a space then to be able to apologize, to be able to ask for forgiveness, and to know that, hey, in the same way we're asking you to seek out the Lord, we're seeking out the Lord because we're still growing. And I just recently, I was riding with my daughter in the car to school and just said, there's no manual to this. This is the hardest job I've ever done is parenting. And the equation keeps changing because culture keeps changing and it keeps popping off new things for us that we don't know about. I've had to confess to my kids and just say, like, hey, I messed up. I'm sorry. You mess up. I mess up. We're all messing up.
I think one of the best things as a dad that you can do, though, is learn to apologize to your kids. When you get it wrong, own it.
Yeah.
And tell them, you know, because your kids know you're not perfect. We want to be, but we're not. And there's something that does ingratiate you with them when you're sincere about it. And, you know, hat in hand, hey, I'm sorry, I messed up. And I'll never hurt you like that again. It was never my intention to hurt you, but I messed up.
So we mentioned about there's a transition in the relationship when they go off to college. What about when she's now out of college? She moved to another state, so she's starting her career.
Yeah.
And you can have all kinds of thoughts about what their career should look like and be. But, like, what was that change when she moved? Like, she's now no longer in driving distance a half hour. She is 8-10 hours away. What did that look like?
I didn't like it at first, you know, but I'm happy that she's doing her thing and she's trying to get it figured out. Like, the growth, I'm happy about her growth, you know, but I miss my little girl, you know, and I miss seeing her. That was the thing. Like, she came home. She'd been gone for, I went 8 months without seeing her.
Oh, wow.
And I hated every bit of that. And so then we've committed to my wife and I making shorter trips and seeing her more throughout the year. But she came home, and it was the best 3 days I had had in years. Like, oh my goodness, it was so good. It just felt right again. And I miss being around her. I don't have to manage her life. I don't have to micromanage, but I just like her, you know? And I like being in her life. And she deals with like some anxiety and depression stuff. And so like to hear her voice, see her face and be able to be like, all right, I want to counsel you as best I can, or just listen to you, or just hug you, you know? Yeah. I like being there. And so her being distant now and phone calls when you know she's not having a good day, I hate that. I hate it. Because I can't solve it. And I know it's our job is not to solve all of our kids' problems. And as men, solving women's problems, that's not what they want. But, you know, but still, it's really super frustrating. And I've learned to, like, we'll have those conversations and we just kind of call it out. Like, Marty, we were talking to her the other day and Marty was like, you're just not having a good day, huh? You're just not talkative. She's like, no, not really. I'm like, all right, you know what? Instead of it being a contention point, it's like, all right, hey, man, we're going to pray for you, you know, love you to death. And, you know, just, you know, have a good rest of your day and we'll talk to you, you know, later this week. And it always changes. It ebbs and flows, you know.
That has to be hard because I may not be able to solve their problem, but there's a sense where I would want to be able to at least give them a hug or just be able to, like, the long hug that I know they just need to know someone
they
cares fold right
into.
Now.
I mean, like, when I saw her, when I hadn't seen her for 8 months, my wife and I got out of the car and I stiff armed my wife to get to Haley first because we always go for the first hug. And she just melted into me, man. And it was the greatest feeling. I go back to a time. And it was just as powerful as she was a difficult baby. And, for the first, she was colicky and like the first 6 months, my wife and I were like, what have we done?
Yeah.
Like we have spawned Satan. Like this kid is atrocious. This is not fun. And I remember one day going in and picking her up in her crib, like 7 months into this thing. And it was one of the, cause she used to, you'd hold her and hug her and her arms would be straight out.
Yeah.
And like she didn't lean into it. And this time she just fell into my arms. Oh my gosh, my heart just melted. Yeah. I'm like, I'm a dad and it's good, you know? And it was one of the best days. And those 2 days bookended in her life kind of were both really great moments for me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, now let's talk about that transition. She has a boy in her life.
No.
So did that change the relationship? Like, what did that do? Or has it been noticeable enough?
Yeah.
She's not married yet, but she's in a serious relationship. So how has that changed? Because now someone else, another guy, is speaking into her life.
Here's the deal. Like, I really like this kid, okay? Yeah. This kid's great. He's appropriately nerdy for her with Disney. They both like the same stuff. He's a good kid. He treats her well. They have fun together. Like, all of that's good. Here's the rub. He's not a believer. And we had told her our whole lives, you know, like Marty, my wife, always had the three rules. You got to love Jesus, love you, and love Mickey. Like those were the three qualities that from the time she was little, we always said. And so she's got two of those, but she's missing the main one.
Yeah.
And so we've had those tough conversations where like, look, you know, I like this kid. I think he's a hustler. I think he's good. I think he's better than his generation. Like, I think you guys are good together. But here's the deal. I have to tell, I said, if I would not be doing my job as a father if I didn't tell you, this is a red flag you want to look out for. Because you're not thinking about it now. Yeah. But 5 years from now, you guys have kids and you want to go to church. Do you drag him to church or he doesn't want to go? You know, or does he have a bent against it and it becomes a problem? I said, honestly, you have to be looking at that as an adult. You have to look at that. This is your decision. I can't make it for you. And I'm not even saying that I wouldn't like give you my blessing to get married because, you know, you don't need that. I know you value what I say, but I'll have this conversation with him 100%. Be like, look, you might not have faith and I'm not happy about that, honestly, but I will tell you this. Like, you're a good person, love her, treat her well, but don't ever stand between her faith and her kids and faith, you know, because that's a problem. That's where you and I will have a problem, you know. Otherwise, you know, you're great. I love you. You're a good kid. But so that's that part of being an adult. Yeah, you're
She's
like
going to make her decisions,
yeah,
but you're there to hopefully guide her into, is this going to be a long-term good decision?
And I've always believed, like, you can't alienate somebody, because if you alienate them, you lose influence over them. Mm-hmm. So you could draw the line and say, I forbid this. Well, what good is that going to do? Yeah. You lose your influence then. So at least this way, I can have my influence on her. And more importantly, I can have my influence on him.
And especially when you have so little control. Like, right. I think that is the, like, I think you hit it right on the head talking about, like, either you're going to alienate yourself, or you're going to be able to have the opportunity to continue to speak in and be there for them. Wanted to just highlight from 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 10. This is Paul writing Timothy, who is not his son, but it's like his son in the faith. But he says these words, and they just really have resonated with me. He says, but you, Timothy, certainly know what I teach, how I live, and what my purpose in life is. Know my faith, my patience, my love, my endurance. You know how much persecution and suffering I have endured. Hopefully our kids walk away knowing that then we pointed them to the Lord. They know our lifestyle, that we mess up sometimes, but we try as hard as we can to be faithful, to continue to go to church, how I live. But they've also seen how we've endured other issues in our home. They live there. They know when we felt persecuted, or they know when we've had afflictions hit or hurt. Like, they've seen us live that out.
And hopefully, too, you taught them enough of those things. I mean, I look back and I feel bad because my kid sees all my bad, too.
Yeah.
They see my good. They see my good moments, but they also see all my bad. And like, that's where you're like, did I lose my influence because I messed up here? And you hope not. You hope that it's a balancing game where your good outweighs your bad in their mind, and that they understand that. But if nothing else, you know, you hope that you put the gospel in front of them and the truth of Jesus, you know, and the perfection of him versus the imperfection of you in front of them, that they can put all these dots together and, you know, connect it as an adult when they're on their own, you know.
Well, thanks for the time today to be able to hash this out.
Oh, yeah.
I know that We're all in it together. I think as men and dads, sometimes we don't talk about the emotion of raising kids. And I think it's really helpful because we care a lot about our kids and we really want to see them do well.
Well, I'm glad we're doing this. And this is the reason, because it's something you said when you walked into the studio one day. You're like, Mother's Day is always about moms are empowered and they're so strong and they're amazing. And then the sermon about Father's Day is, you got to do better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah.
So I think this is good. And hopefully it helps somebody ultimately, you know, figure their path out as a dad and maybe do it better than we did.
Don't stop your journey here. Check out the accompanying World's Biggest Small Group Study. Text the word GROW, that's G-R-O-W, to 67101.